Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light. Good morning again and welcome. My guest today, Brian Cantor, is an author, independent publishing consultant, and retired Army officer. He launched Telecoast Publishing to help Christian authors publish to non-Christian audiences and has released his own work under that imprint. As a book and audiobook publishing consultant for My Word Publishing, he helps authors navigate the complex world of independent publishing. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate being here.
Brian, it's a pleasure to have you back with us again. It's been a couple of years since you were on the show, and you and I have worked together, and it's always a pleasure to connect with you.
You as well. I really enjoy the opportunity to talk to your audience.
Thank you. Brian, let's start off by talking about what motivated you to become an author in the first place.
Yeah, it was funny because I was doing a Master's of Religious Studies program a while back. It was spread out over about 7 years or so because I was only doing classes in the summers. But I did my thesis work that I did was on evangelism in a postmodern culture. A lot of the Protestant world has grown up in the modern world. A lot of the Catholic faith was established in the pre-modern world. Some of those practices have tended to carry forward. But in the middle of that, we've kind of transitioned over to a postmodern world. And it's just a little different context. But it was funny. One of the lots, of course, characteristics of postmodern culture, but one of those characteristics is that some postmodern people are more receptive to ideas, truths, if you will, in a story form rather than as a logical argument. One of the characteristics of postmodernism is that there's not necessarily an acceptance of the idea that there's some kind of absolute truth out there. So truth tends to become relative to the group that you become a part of. Expressing those truths or those ideas is more acceptable in story form than in as a logical argument, you know, something that we might call, I don't know, an exegetical kind of argument or something like that. At that time, I just really felt the Lord talking to me and saying, hey, just like Jesus taught in parables so that it was easier for people to understand spiritual concepts, he wanted me to write books, novels, fiction stories that would contain Christian principles and ideas. I wish I could say I was the first person to think of such an idea, but I think that's really what C.S. Lewis was trying to do with a lot of his books and things like that. So if I had an aspiration or a dream, I would love to be the C.S. Lewis of our generation, where you can take Christian ideas and principles, express them in fiction books that are targeted towards non-Christian audiences, and hopefully expose people to these ideas that they might not encounter any other way. You know, they might not be the kind of people that would show up at a church service or a Bible study or something like that. So that's what inspired me to become an author to begin with.
And I was going to say, Brian, when you mentioned Jesus relating back to the greatest storyteller ever. What you are saying makes perfect sense. So in your writing journey, Brian, we all have them. What kind of stumbling blocks did you encounter?
Yeah, so it's funny, and it, this one is actually a stumbling block maybe that I didn't personally encounter, but I kind of got a heads up about it. One of my classmates from college, I went to West Point a long time ago, and one of my classmates published a book that it was around 2010 or 11, became the teen book of the year, and she was interviewed on all kinds of even television spots with public TV and things like that. I found out about it, and I listened to the audiobook, and I sent her a note and said, wow, what an amazing Christian story. And she responded back to me and she said, "Shh, don't tell anybody. If my editors found out that this was a Christian book, then they would they'd pull it." Because certainly with the big five publishers, traditional publishers, they have Christian imprints. They have separate sub companies, separate imprints for their Christian books. Their answer usually, she said, for Christian authors is, if you've got too much Christian content in there, they'll say, well, go publish with a Christian imprint.
Yeah.
Of course, the problem there is that's where everything would get shelved then. I don't know if you're familiar with BISAC codes. It's the book industry standards codes that they use, and that kind of tells people where to shelve my book in a brick-and-mortar bookstore like Barnes & Noble or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So Christian books all have Christian BISAC codes and Christian imprints, and they all get shelved in the Christian section. So even if it's, say, a mystery or suspense novel or an action-adventure novel, it doesn't get filed in with the suspense or the action-adventure novels. It gets filed over with Christian suspense or Christian action-adventure, whatever it may be. If you're trying to reach non-Christian audiences, those books just don't end up there. They end up being, you know, under a Christian imprint, shelved with other Christian books, and so non-Christian people just won't end up finding them at all. My friend told me this, and I realized that ended up being true. I did a little bit more research and took a look at it and found out that if I wanted to publish my books with a Christian publisher, then they would want that to be very overtly Christian, have Christian themes, and of course kind of conform to a lot of the Christian norms that we have in terms of content and stuff like that. But if I wanted my books to be read by non-Christians, then if I had too much Christian content in there, then it wouldn't get accepted by traditional publishers. So I had to go looking for other venues and avenues and options to be able to reach a non-Christian audience with kind of light Christian themes.
Wow. And that describes very well, Brian, the catch-22 that we are in, because I believe it is the dream of most quote-unquote Christian authors to write that book that is going to reach the non-believer, the non-Christian reader, and somehow change their life in some positive way and hopefully lead them to the Christian life. I think that is the dream that is in the back of the mind of most Christian authors. So let me ask you this. If you were to meet someone that you had never met before and tell them that you are a Christian author, what message would you want that statement to convey to that person?
Yeah, and so honestly, the answer to that question is a little bit different, because I probably would not, depending on the person. If I was talking to another Christian,
right,
I would tell them, of course, yeah, I'm a Christian author, but I'm trying to publish for non-Christian audiences. If I just meet somebody and I don't know what their faith background is at all, I probably wouldn't introduce myself as a Christian author. I'd introduce myself as a historical fiction author or, you know, something like that, because I might be interested in having those folks read my books. And of course, there's nothing wrong with Christian authors who are writing to a Christian audience. That we certainly need that for stories that inspire people in their faith, maybe stories that help disciple people and that kind of stuff. But the books that I'm and I will say that I'm not really trying to convert people, so I'm not necessarily trying to have somebody take that step from being non-Christian to Christian. Oh, of course, the Holy Spirit is the one that does that conversion, not me anyway.
Right. Correct.
But if you look at kind of the spectrum of, say, a negative 10, somebody says, "I hate Christians and everything they stand for," and a positive 10 is, you know, I'm a life missionary. I'm living my life for God and for his kingdom. And if you look at zero as kind of that conversion where you go back and forth from, say, a negative 1 to a positive 1, where that step of conversion, what I'm focusing on is really not trying to take that step of somebody's conversion from being a non-Christian to a Christian, but say just move people a little bit farther forward off of the negative scale. So maybe take somebody who's a negative 8, 9, or 10, you know, that just really has kind of a bad image in their mind of Christians or a bad opinion of Christians, and expose them to some Christian thoughts and ideas in a context where they might just be able to move up just a little bit. Maybe they move from a negative 8 to a negative 6 or a negative 5 or something like that. So they're kind of heading that direction. And then I think there's lots of opportunities out there through Christian service ministries, traditional evangelistic kinds of ministries and things like that, church outreach programs and stuff like that, that might be able to catch somebody at that point and help them in their walk a little bit farther forward. My focus is kind of with a big net, gathering and herding people in the right direction, maybe, rather than fishing with a fishing pole and hoping to help them make that final step. Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely does, Brian. And it's been several years ago now, but I heard another speaker explain that same scale from negative 10 to positive 10, and how our goal is to just move a person a little bit up on that scale. And like we've said with other guests on other shows, it is our job to plant seeds. That's it. Our job is not to go out there and make this great conversion speech in our work. It is to plant those seeds that maybe make that person take a step back and say, maybe I should research this thing a little further. And then from there on, they go. And then, of course, like we mentioned earlier, the Holy Spirit is what steps in and leads that person in the direction that they need to go to help them along the way. So, yes, I think you described that very well, Brian, and thank you.
Paul said the same thing with regard to Apollos. You know, Apollos was he wasn't one of the original apostles and stuff like that, but he was a great teacher of biblical principles and things. And Paul encountered a bunch of followers of Apollos, and he said, you know, look, I don't really want you to call yourselves a follower of Apollos or a follower of Paul. I really want you to be a follower of Christ. And, you know, if Apollos planted the seed and then I watered it and it moved it along a little bit, then that's great, because really ultimately that's God that is guiding the person and drawing the person to himself. And we're people that God is working through along the way to help that process move forward. And so I just considered that an incredible privilege to be able to participate with my God and Father to be able to impact the lives of other people in a way, hopefully, that has an eternal impact, Stephen, just making their life better today.
Exactly. Well, you talked earlier about the classification of novels, which I don't think I was aware of that. Thank you for sharing that with me and with our listeners. So as an independent publishing consultant, tell us, what are some of the options available to Christian authors today to get over that obstacle of what you talked about earlier?
Yeah, and actually there's kind of the big options that are available, and some of these are more pertinent to this particular topic than others. Of course, if you go with one of the big five publishers to pursue traditional publishing, I mean, you have all the obstacles just to getting published that you have before. You know, they're not going to work with you directly. They're going to work with an agent. So, you know, you'll send out your 40 or 50 query letters over a year period of time or whatever to try to find an agent, you know. And there's nothing wrong with this. Obviously, the traditional publishers have a huge amount of experience in the industry. They're going to bring the resources to the table, so you don't have to provide much in the way of upfront costs and things like that to the individual author. But they're for sure going to target getting people into brick-and-mortar bookstores primarily. They're going to sell online. That's going to be applying those BISAC codes and determining where things are going to get shelved and what audiences are going to look at those books there. But there's nothing wrong with those folks at all. It's a business, and so your story has to be something that's marketable, not necessarily the story that you always wanted to tell or the story that God puts on your heart, right? And mm-hmm. So there's that option available to people, and certainly there's nothing wrong with pursuing that option, but it is probably the one that's going to present the most obstacles and a lot of rejection too. You got to be good at rejection, because you're going to have lots of people telling you, send out 40 or 50 query letters, 39 to 49 of them are going to be no's before you finally get a yes. And then it might take them a year to be able to sell that manuscript to a traditional publisher. And then, of course, they're going to buy 2 years out, because they're going to run you through the full set of editing cycles and things like that, which is all very good. They're trying to produce a good quality book.
Sure.
So there's that option. I think that one presents the most obstacles. Then there's the small independent presses. And many of those can be Christian publishers, but not really have the identity as a Christian publisher. In other words, everybody knows that, say, Bethany House is a Christian publisher and Simon & Schuster is a normal, regular publisher. But if you have, there's just hundreds of these small independent presses. And again, they come to the table with a lot of experience, things like that, but less in the way of resources as the big giant publishers have, right? And again, there's nothing wrong with that model at all. They're very honest business, and they've usually got quite a bit of experience in the market. In addition to not having as much in the way of resources, a lot of times they're a little bit constrained in their business process. Sometimes they're mom-and-pop shops, you know, so if the founders of that publishing house either retire or, you know, something happens to them or whatever, you may have problems there where you'd have to buy back your rights to your own book, because when a traditional publisher, either a small house or a big house, when they buy your book, they own the book. To a certain extent, they're going to have a lot of the creative control as well. They're going to tell you, no, you need to take these chapters out or these scenes out or add something else here, similar to what a normal developmental editor is going to tell you, except if you're doing publishing it on your own, then you're getting suggestions from a professional. If you're working with a traditional house, then they're going to have a lot more directive kind of relationship with you, again, because their primary concern is whether that book is marketable or not. Both of those are good options to publish, and very legitimate options to publish, but sometimes not the most effective in terms of being able to, you know, cross over that boundary between Christian and non-Christian authors. The third one, and these are the ones where you really have to kind of be careful. A lot of times they'll call them vanity presses, or lots of different terms out there. But usually yes. It's a model where you're going to pay somebody to publish your book for you, this publishing house or whatever. What I strongly encourage authors to do, the Alliance of Independent Authors runs a watchdog service where they go out, they're a nonprofit organization, and they will go out and evaluate different publishing services. So whether it's a book publisher or whether it's even like a cover designer or an editor or something like that, and they'll evaluate these services and give them a rating of green, everything's good, yellow or red, caution, or, you know, be careful and stay away from these people. Some of them really, it's unfortunate, but a lot of times one of the ways that these companies make business is either you have to pay them a lot of money and then they publish it. And a lot of times they'll have packages, you know, the silver, the bronze, the gold package. And you pick one of their packages and you get maybe three choices of cover design and, you know, pick one and go with it and stuff like that. So it's not very customized. But a lot of times they also, I guess it's part of the business model for you to buy a large quantity of your books from them, and usually these prices are significant markup from what the pure printing cost of the book is. Often they're working through a print-on-demand publisher like Ingram Spark or Amazon KDP or something like that, but they're requiring you to buy, say, 1,000 copies of these books. Yeah. And I personally know people who have published this way, and you go over to their house and find out that they've got boxes and boxes and boxes of books sitting around their house because they had to buy 1,000 copies of their books. And, you know, they're never going to sell those out of the back of their car or even at book signings or something like that, that many copies of their book and things. So my recommendation is, if you're thinking about going to one of these, sometimes they're called hybrid publishers, sometimes they're called vanity presses, sometimes they're called online subsidy publishers. whatever. But if you just go, if you're thinking about working with somebody, go to selfpublishingadvice.org, nonprofit organization, the Alliance of Independent Authors, and just check on the company that you're thinking about working with. And if they've got a yellow or a red rating, just go find somebody else, because there's plenty of good options out there. The final category out here, and this is what I chose to do intentionally for my books, and that's why I formed a publishing company, Telecoast Publishing, and this is kind of what we advocate through My Word Publishing for many authors, is particularly if you want to become a full-time author or want to publish several books, is to become one of those small independent presses. And the way that you do that is simply just by registering a business. So you can either register a business name as a sole proprietorship. In some states, that's called a trade name. So you'd be registering a trade name. If you've already got a business, sometimes you can just do what's called a DBA, doing business as, and have your publishing company be an adjunct to your existing business. Or, if you're going to do it more long-term, maybe you can form an LLC or an S-Corp or a C-Corp. And if you do that, then you have your own publishing company. And by the way, the Independent Book Publishing Association, IBPA, and the Alliance of Independent Authors both recommend that you kind of take that authors who want to be multi-published take this kind of approach. If you do that, here's the great thing. You're primarily going to publish through online bookstores at that point. So probably most of your business is going to be through either Amazon or Ingram Spark. And instead of just getting in that category of the BISAC code, which is where you'd get shelved in a brick-and-mortar bookstore, if you go to Amazon, the categories that are available to you, I have to go back and double check. There were at one point over about 1,000 different categories that you could be in for ebooks or paperbacks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can pick more than one. With Amazon, you used to be able to pick up to 10. Now it's 3 for each format of your book. So you could have like 3 for your ebook, 3 for your paperback, and 3 other ones for your hardcover, right? Mm-hmm. And you're not shoehorned into those Christian topics if you have Christian content. You get to decide what category does my book fit into. So now I can take my action adventure novel or my historical fiction novel, and I can categorize it as historical fiction or action and adventure. I make that decision, and that's where people will find it in Amazon's bookstore when they're looking for it. And so it doesn't automatically get labeled as a Christian book. And so your access this way to the general audience, the non-Christian audience, is so much easier and simpler. And even in your keywords, you get your metadata keywords when you're setting something up in KDP or even in Ingram Spark. And you can choose those keywords based on, your content, and you don't have to shoehorn yourself into, getting that Christian label to where non-Christians are going to look at it and go, I don't want to read that because that's just going to be one of those preachy books.
And I don't think I realized, Brian, that you can use different categories for different formats. I guess I thought that if you published a Kindle copy and then you put a copy in print that you had to use those same categories. So that's nice to know.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this is kind of funny. They aren't the same. So you might find at a very high level. So if you're doing, romance or contemporary romance or something like that, you'll find they'll have them both in the Kindle and the print book categories. You can find that same category in both. But there's many of the categories, when you really drill down to some of the sub-category levels, that are not the same. They don't even exist across the different formats. And so you might pick it on ebook, and then you want to pick the same thing for your print book, and you can't because it's not available there. But the good thing is, and this is why I like using different categories for all the formats of my book, is regardless of how somebody does that search, they're going to end up on the same Amazon product page, right? And they're going to see all of your formats. So they might do a search and key in on one of your hardcover categories, but then when they land on your product description page, they might go, "Oh no, I'd rather read the ebook." So they just click the ebook and buy the ebook. It gives you a broader base of hitting the right terms in the searches and the search engines on Amazon.
Okay, well that does make sense.
Another thing that's so important about being able to publish independently is you get to publish the book that God puts on your heart, not necessarily the one that is the most marketable. And quite honestly, God says, "When my word goes out, it will not return to me void," right? So if he's inspired you to write something, even if it's just this particular 5 or 10 people that end up needing that, you know, it's accomplishing God's work. And it doesn't matter if it's going to be the next New York Times bestseller.
We'll take a break here where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen. My guest today is Brian Cantor, independent publishing consultant and author of The Bethany Tales, Vainglory, and Daughter of the Gods, a novel of the Picts, that's spelled Picts, P-I-C-T-S. If you would like to listen to this episode again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is on archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That's spelled PattySheene.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to archived episodes. Under each episode is a More Information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview with Brian. Brian, I read most of Bethany Tales and I read most of Vainglory. Two very different books. Bethany Tales is based on biblical characters, and I loved it. I thought it was great the way you used the point of view of these characters and how their relationship with Jesus. Then let's go to Vainglory, which is a story about a couple who are on the verge of divorce. He's in the service. And my question is this. If I were a person seeking a Christian book, okay, and I've read Bethany Tales, and I see, oh, this author has also written another book called Vainglory. And I go to read Vainglory, and I love the story, but there was some language in there that I did not find offensive, but certain Christian readers would be, "Oh, he called his character a blanky blank. I thought he was a Christian author." How do you respond to that?
Yeah, so I probably made a mistake. I published, so I've got three novels out right now. Bethany Tales is overtly Christian.
Yes.
So, there's no mistaking that at all. It's a biblical setting. It's all biblical characters, that kind of thing. So it's overtly Christian book. I probably should have published that under a different pen name, but I didn't. My second two books, one is called Daughter of the Gods, and it was written. It's set in 4th century Scotland, and so that one. It's interesting because in that historical context, it was in 367 AD. By that time, the Roman Empire, at least the Roman Emperor, was nominally Christian, you know, claimed to be Christian. Most of the Roman aristocracy became Christian. And so Roman Britain, below Hadrian's Wall, was all nominally Christian, mostly nominally Christian, particularly the aristocracy and the well-to-do people, because, you know, they're going to do whatever the emperor does. Above the wall in Scotland, you're still Celtic pagan. 99% of Daughter of the Gods is written in a Celtic pagan context. That's the culture there. And so you're dealing a lot with the Celtic pantheon, the Celtic gods, how they're influencing people's lives. And people at that time were very legitimately, you know, most of the things that they did, they thought were impacted by the gods. But that context gave me the opportunity to compare and contrast a little bit between the Celtic pantheon and this Christian god of the Romans below the wall, you know, in Roman Britain. And so there's only about five scenes or so that talk about the Christian perspective, and the heroine in the book is asking a bard, a friend of hers who had the chance to travel extensively below the wall, tell me about this Christian God. And so there's about four or five scenes that tell about Christianity and Christian God. The whole rest of the book is framed in a Celtic pagan perspective. And of course, you know, some of those practices were kind of brutal in terms of in not only the warfare, but just some of the things that they do in terms of things like human sacrifice and stuff like that.
Yes.
So, yeah, if somebody read Bethany Tales and then they read Daughter of the Gods, they would go, oh, some of this stuff is pretty edgy. Some of it's pretty. So flip it around. And somebody who's Celtic pagan, who's reading this from the Celtic pagan perspective, and then they encounter these ideas, these Christian ideas, not a lot of them, four or five scenes that have these Christian ideas in them. If then they look me up as an author and say, what else does this guy have? Well, then they're going to encounter this overtly Christian book. And maybe, maybe some of them are going to go, well, let me give it a shot. I kind of like the other story. I was exposed to these ideas, Christian ideas. Maybe I can read that book and give it a shot. Same thing with Vainglory. If you're just exactly like you said, if you read Bethany Tales first and you think, well, this guy's a Christian author, and then you read Vainglory, and it's about a couple that's on the verge of divorce, and they have some pretty nasty fights.
Yeah.
although I think probably even our Christian fellow Christians would have to admit that sometimes in the context of a very heated emotional argument, even in a Christian relationship, sometimes people might use some language that they probably ought not, and things like that. I did something slightly different in Vainglory. The couple there is having a fight. He's a military officer, and it's also cross-cultural because she comes from a,
yes,
a Hispanic family from Puerto Rico. And so you have a little bit of that dynamic coming into play too. And they've got a special needs daughter. So they've got that kind of coming into play too. Fairly tense circumstance. And the parents are being a little bit overbearing and things like that. So there's a lot of causes of tension in that relationship. But they've got two friends. Each one of them kind of has a friend, mentor, advisor. In the case of a husband, his friend advisor says, hey, you know, this book called Five Love Languages was really helpful to me and my wife. We were running into some problems. The principles in this book were really helpful. Likewise, the wife, her friend, says, I know what you're going through. My husband and I had some really rocky times too. I went to this conference by a guy named Emerson Eggerich, and he had written this book called Love and Respect. This book was really helpful to us. In the context of the story, you kind of see how those two books help the couple resolve some of their differences, kind of take a look inside at themselves, right? Because it's usually,
yes,
not always the other person's fault.
For sure,
and,
yeah.
Or not just, right? Yeah. My tactic there was, maybe people, if they're reading this book and they hear in the context of the story, hey, these other two books were helpful, maybe they'll go, oh, I wonder if that's a real book. You know, I wonder if there is such a book called Love and Respect, or I wonder if there is such a book called Five Love Languages. Look those books up and then maybe read those books and let those books do kind of the heavy lifting of introducing people more deeply into the Christian faith. So that was kind of my approach with those. And again, maybe somebody read the Bethany Tales first and then they read Vainglory, they might get put off because it's kind of edgy. But if somebody reads Vainglory first and says, hey, I wonder what else this guy's got, and then reads Bethany Tales, maybe that could be their bridge or their doorway into encountering a much more overt kind of Christian message. So that was a very, very long answer to your question. I hope kind of people see the idea and the tactic and the thought that went in behind that. And I don't know, maybe God was the one that made me mess up and put them all under the same pen name rather than having a separate pen name for the other.
Well, personally, Brian, I certainly didn't mean to put you on the spot with this, but personally, I have enjoyed both books. I am not real put off by some of the words that you used in that book, because having been in a marriage myself for close to 40 years, my husband has passed away now, but I mean, I remember things get really tense sometimes, and you do say things. You throw out words that you certainly don't mean, but at the time, maybe you mean them. So I thought that book was very realistic myself, because I think even among Christian couples that sometimes, yeah, we lose our temper. We're human. We say things that we certainly don't mean. And later on, you look back and you think, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I said this to this person that I love so much. But in the heat of the moment, I thought you have done a really good job. And actually, I can't wait to finish it. I'm about 75% into the story now. I like the fact that you have the two friends and the two books that you bring into play. And maybe these two books are going to help these two. And these two friends are going to help these two people resolve this issue that they're dealing with. I thought there was a lot of great conflict and tension, and very realistically so. So I wanted to champion you for the story. And then, of course, Bethany Tales, like I say, was an entirely different type of story, and I enjoyed it because I just love anything that gives me a perspective on what life was probably really like for those people back in biblical times when they encountered Jesus. So I think you did a great job with both. So that's my opinion anyway, for listeners.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate you also reading them, and with that feedback obviously is very encouraging. Authors love to get that kind of feedback on their books.
Speaking of marriage and such like, you have a very exciting event coming up in your life. So tell us about that.
I do. I'm very excited. My fiance and I, we finally settled on a wedding date. And quite honestly, I think that was God helping us out a little bit there too. We're going to be married on the 30th of September. And my fiance is Dawn Alexander, and she is just an absolutely wonderful, beautiful Christian woman inside and out. She's a very, very beautiful lady, but she's also got a beautiful heart and is absolutely inspiring to me in prayer. She is a true prayer warrior and the kind of person that, you know, a lot of times we'll say to somebody, oh, I'll pray for you. She's more likely to just say, hey, can I pray with you at the moment?
Yes.
Or if she hears something, you know, a lot of times we'll say, oh, well, I'll include that in my prayers this evening, you know, when I'm praying before I go to bed or something like that. And she'll just stop right there and she says, we just need to pray for this person now. And she has definitely seen God's leading in her life, just turning everything around. And she's just a wonderful, wonderful, sweet, devoted follower of Christ and such a blessing to me. When the Bible says that a godly woman is more precious than jewels, I can certainly attest to that with my Dawn. Hopefully we don't do a repeat of what I wrote about in in Vainglory. Hopefully we will have learned some of those lessons up front and can avoid some of those things. We have, by the way, both of us read together the five love languages and love and respect. And so hopefully we'll be a little bit, not only forearmed with a little bit of information, but I think if you dedicate your relationship to God, and if God is always the center of your relationship, of course you're going to have issues, just like everybody has issues whenever you're putting two lives together. But hopefully we'll be able to extend that mercy and that grace and that forgiveness to each other, just like God has done that for us. I'm excited. I'll tell you very quickly, we've been engaged for almost a year and just hadn't, from a bunch of logistics reasons and all of that kind of stuff, hadn't been able to settle on a date. we kept trying, you know, what about this, what about that, and all that kind of stuff. Well, a good friend of hers had suggested a photographer and said, oh, if you can get this photographer, that'd be fantastic. Little did we know that you got to plan this stuff like a year in advance to get on somebody's schedule, the venue, the photographer, you know, all this, even the cake and stuff. So she had followed this photographer on Instagram, and the photographer posted a post on Instagram and said, hey, everybody, I just had a cancellation on September 30th. If anybody would like to take that date, then I can give you a discount. It was so funny because Dawn immediately messaged her back and said, hey, how much would it be? And are you available and everything? And the woman, the photographer sent back and said, when's your date? And Dawn says, it's great because we don't have a date yet. And she said, but I'm willing to bet that my fiance would be more than happy to settle on the 30th of September. So I think God said, okay, you guys have been messing around with this for too long, and I'm going to help you decide on a date.
Oh, how neat is that, Brian? That is really, really a neat story.
We are absolutely certain that God not only put us together, but has kept us together through this time. I'll tell you another quick story. I apologize if you've got a minute or two. I had moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico. I was going to St. John's College, which is a literary institute, and I was doing my second half of my program. I had started in Annapolis, Maryland, and was finishing it up in Santa Fe. And I had been there for a while, and I occasionally will preach in churches. And I actually run Five Love Languages seminars and things like that in churches.
Ooh.
Unbeknownst to me, one of Don's friends was part of a member of this church. I didn't know Dawn, didn't know anything about her. And this friend, I was there the whole year, you know, while I was in this program and, you know, participating in church and everything like that. And I guess most of the time her friend was telling her, hey, Dawn, there's this guy I think you ought to meet and stuff like that. Well, finally, 1 week before I was ready to graduate from the program, they invited us on a double date with her and her husband and me and Dawn. And you know how double dates, you know, you're always kind of skeptical about, okay, I'll go. From the moment I met her, she was just captured my heart. She did. Her personality, she's very beautiful. So we went to dinner that night. And the next day I said, hey, how would you like to take a hike? So together, we'd love to hike together. And so we hiked up Sandia Peak and had kind of an adventure there and things. So we got to know each other, really liked each other. And I said, well, unfortunately, I'm graduating in about 3 days. And 2 days after that, I'm moving to Scotland for 6 months to go do research on a novel that I'm writing. And so it was like, oh, okay. God not only introduced us, I think, but also kept us together through that whole time when I was in Scotland and she was here. And then I moved back to Colorado and I was here. And we finally ended up during COVID. I live full-time now. I bought a motorhome. I wanted to go on the road. I left Colorado. I was going to stop here and just say hi to her for a little while. I planned to stay a week, but my campground got canceled because of COVID. My reservations got canceled in Arizona, where I was heading to. So I had to stay here for about a month. We had a whole month, and she's actually an OR nurse and was furloughed during that time because they had canceled all their outpatient surgeries. And so we had an entire month to spend together, to get to know each other and go on hikes and adventures and things like that. So that just got us off to an amazing start. So, yeah,
wow.
It was a blessing. I'm so thankful to God.
I guess so. Well, Brian, I wish you the very best, you and Dawn, the very best in your marriage. And may God bless it. And may you have many, many happy and healthy years together.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you so much for what you're doing with this podcast. I think every time, one of my favorite verses in the Bible is in Revelation. It says, and they overcame him. You know, they overcame the evil one by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. And so I think every time we have an opportunity to share what God has done in our lives, what he's currently doing in our lives, that just strengthens our own faith, and it strengthens the faith of people who hear. So your podcast, I think, is doing a phenomenal job of helping people share their testimonies with one another. So thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much, Brian, as well. And may God continue to bless you as well in what you do for authors and helping them navigate their way through this publishing forest that we sometimes find ourselves in. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, and God bless.
God bless you.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheene.com. That's spelled PattySheene.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that, and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheene. Until next time, God bless you.